This is 91.7 WHUS Storrs, Connecticut, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It's October 26, 2016, and I am Peddlin' Ron, your host. Welcome to Bicycle Talk this week with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show, please call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to us on podcast, you can send an email to the same address, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Starting off today, Ron's rant of the day. We got to have Ron's rant of the day. It's fun. So I'm perusing around on the internet, and I found a website where it's called icebike.org, and they had it's located out west somewhere. I think it's based in the Oregon, Washington area. I'm pretty sure, but anyway, they had a list of the top five politicians that are not bike friendly. And I thought, what a wonderful thing to bring out on the rant of the day. So I am going to touch base on this because it was rather interesting. And what we're going to find is there are some people out there that are just not very friendly as far as bicycles go and the legislation that they work with. So we're going to start with number one on their list was a person from New York, Thomas Baraga, and he's a legislator in New York State. And come on here, let me see. He... Everybody's got their things. Anyway, this is the site here, icebike.org, says we hate cyclists by politicians who are against bikes. So anyway, let's bring up legislator Baraga here and see what the problem is with him. It's New York State is home to one of the world's biggest collections of cyclists, and there's a lot of people that support them there, but Thomas Baraga is not one in that crowd. He has outrageous comments. He's just, no one here, get this is a quote, no one who lives in our hamlet, or for that matter, in Suffolk County, should ever ride a bicycle or a motorcycle. I cannot tell you how many constituents over the years have told me that they are taking up bicycling for pleasure and exercise. I have told them not to do so, but they usually do it, not listen. 90% of those people eventually were hit by an automobile. Many, like this person who addressed him, his mother, with serious physical injuries. And then he goes on to say that bike lanes aren't suitable for alternatives since people would still be struck. He claims that motorists are not accustomed to seeing motorcycles and cyclists in the road, and so therefore they just don't belong. Good guy, huh? This is the guy you want out there taking care of us and putting through legislature to help make our roads a lot safer. So there you go. You got a really, really nice little piece there for him. Next on my list here, it's Representative Ed Orcutt, and he is from Washington State. And he also has some off-the-wall comments that are just crazy, especially when you look at a place like Washington State, which is where Seattle is, which is a very progressive and bicycle-friendly city, and, you know, anyway. But here he is. He's in Washington State, and he is there as a state representative. He believes that there should be a bicycle tax. That alone isn't a particularly heinous crime, but that you're not paying. It's his reasoning that makes us shake our heads in both shame and pity. Orcutt believes that cyclists not only contribute to pollution, but they are actually worse for the environment than cars. Well, I don't know where this logic comes from, but this is what he says, and so therefore he's on the hit list of the top five here. Now, none of it really seems to make a whole lot of sense here, but you know, the the European Cyclist Federation did a study on this very topic, the CO2 emissions that were put out between various forms of transportation. Their verdict, ORCID, is undeniably wrong. Cyclists produce about approximately 21 grams of CO emissions per kilometer. Cars produce 229 grams. So 21 grams, 229 grams. There's no argument here. Cycling is certainly better for the environment by a landslide here. Now, if you look at some of his other comments, this guy, he believes that cyclists do not pay for roads, but motorists do, implying that cyclists should have to pay taxes for the right to use the roads. Now, that's true. We don't have gas tax. So because we don't have to buy gasoline to put into our bicycles, because therefore we're not paying for the roads, as he says. But we all pay taxes. So those taxes, if you're paying federal taxes, the federal taxes go to highways. There are a percentage of them that go to the federal highway tax, that go to your state roads. And even in your local municipalities, you get money from the government, from taxes that pay for it. So this guy is once again clueless and wrong, and that's really unfortunate. So anyway, moving on. Here's a fun one. Anybody out there remember Mayor Rob Ford from Toronto?
Yes.
Yeah, kind of an outrageous individual anyway, in many, many ways. But anyway, he's in Toronto. Toronto being in Canada, being pretty much a progressive area as far as cycling goes. I mean, people in Canada ride bikes, and they're into it, and they have wonderful bike lanes. I know if you go up to Quebec, it's great there because they have just wonderful bike lanes. Lots of people commute back and forth to work. It's unbelievable. But Ford pulls no punches when it comes to the cycling community. In his usual belligerent manner, he has said things like how cyclists are a pain in the, we'll leave it at that, to drivers, or when asked about bike lanes, rejected the idea because we don't live in Florida. Now, what does that mean? I just don't understand. I mean, we were down in Florida. What is it? Florida has more bike lanes? Well, you need bike lanes because you're in Florida? I have no idea. So anyway.
Florida is a place where you go to get warm and also possibly ride a bike.
Well, yeah, but you can ride a bike in any weather. And we're going to talk about that later in the show, because this is going to be the show that talks about winter cycling clothing and lights.
You do know that Rob Ford is in, I don't know if he's in heaven, but he's in, you know, excess heaven anyway.
Has he left us?
He
left the planet?
In March.
Oh, no kidding. Well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, well, here's another thing that he had said. We can now say had said. He claimed that if a cyclist is hit and killed by a car, it's their own fault. So rest in peace, Rob Ford. maybe where you went, there will be lots of people riding bicycles, and you'll have to figure it out and find out that we're not such evil people. Another person on the list, Councillor Russ Wyatt, and that says here, and company from Winnipeg. And he is a city councillor who hates bicycles and bicycle infrastructure. He hates it so much that the idea of working towards improving infrastructure for cyclists and pedestrians made him storm out of a meeting in rage. It's just amazing that these people have such closed minds. And it's sad and unfortunate. Instead of doing a mature thing as a politician and staying in the meeting and then accepting the defeat that he was given, there was a plan that he had called flawed. He instead wrote 20 different defeating motions to the mayor's and taped them on the mayor's office door, writing democracy denied on every sheet. The man's kind of laughable. But anyway, he's on the list. And of course, we go down here at the bottom and we go to Mayor David Spellman from Black Hawk, Colorado. Second layer mayor on the list. And like the previous one, he's not just hated for his anti-bike stance. This guy's gotten a public scorn for other things too. He's kind of a good old boy. He's not such a nice guy. He pistol whipped his wife. I mean, he's not a very happy character. But he also does not like bicycles. So anyway, this mayor, you see, he managed to get bicycles banned on the streets for safety reasons in his town. Banned on the streets for safety reasons. You know, this guy is obviously just not paying attention. He is obviously very car and truck motorized vehicle friendly. And anyway, we won't even get into it. Cars kill way more people than bikes do. The statistics are out there and we can see it. So here we go. That's basically the top five that this particular list had. I'm sure we could come up with more if we looked around and we could figure out exactly who the haters are around in our general area. You look around in your neighborhood, but we're not gonna go there. So that's my rant of the day. Top five politicians that I found online that were not very friendly about bicycles. Wake up, politicians. It's that political time of year, and this is an important subject because as we take a look at the decline of automobile sales and the decline of petroleum usage in those automobiles and the fact that the millennial population in this country is choosing to move back into the cities. They're choosing to use mass transportation. They're choosing to ride bicycles back and forth to work and to school. There's a change going on, and there is a this is all for the better. It's better for our environment. It's better for our health and fitness. These are things that politicians should be paying very, very close attention to in these unstable political times. I'll say it that way. That's kind of a kind way of putting it, isn't it? So moving on, this week's show, I kind of wanted to touch base on a few things about this time of year. As we get into this time of year, and we've been through some unbelievable weekends of fall foliage and the beauty that creates. But as that comes in, we start losing daylight. We're losing it pretty rapidly right now. And 2 to 3 minutes a day, I think, is what we're losing in daylight. So it's getting dark. It's getting dark earlier. It's dark in the morning now when it was not before. We're really losing a lot of daylight time, and which is also, you know, positive time to ride your bicycle. So if you are continuing to ride, like let's say that you're a bicycle commuter, for instance, how do you continue to do this? It's not only getting darker, it's also getting colder. And so now you have to look at, but, you know, now I got to dress up and put all this stuff. Oh, well, what, you know, and what do you wear? So today we're going to talk about a few different things. We're going to talk about clothing and we're going to talk about lighting. And with the technical advances of clothing and lighting that are out there right now, there is no excuse to stop riding your bicycle when the light goes down and when it gets a little bit cooler. So if you want to stick with this, if you've spent the summer commuting on your bike and you got really turned on by the fact that, you know, you let the car sit in the driveway all week and maybe just use it to run some errands, or maybe you don't even use it at all anymore, big, big tip of the Pedal and Run hat to you. That's just a great, great thing that you're doing that. But how do I keep doing this? And obviously, it gets really cold here. We live in the Northeast, so we get cold and we get damp weather that rolls in for the winter. And it can be, you know, pretty unbearable. Some of us have limits as to how cold we can go. Some of us are tougher than others. I am not one of the tougher than others. I have the limits. So I have a point where once it gets below 40 degrees outside, I'm just not comfortable anymore. And so it makes it very, very difficult for me to be out there riding my bicycle. So so I want to touch on the lights first, because the lights, as we're losing daylight, we're not losing the weather as quickly as we're losing the daylight right now. So the daylight is a problem. A few years ago, I would go out to purchase a light to use on my bicycle, and there have always been some incredibly high-powered lights out there. There have been halogen lights out there. There have been some high-wattage lights out there, and they worked incredibly well. A lot of them were rechargeable batteries. Many of them were made in the early days of lighting systems, were made with a standard lead acid battery, which is similar to a battery that you would have in your automobile. That's what you'd use to start your car with. They're very, very heavy. They're very clunky. Not as, you know, a bicycle light battery, it wasn't as heavy as a car battery light, but it was still a pretty heavy product to carry with you. Some of those were fastened onto the top tube of your bicycle, and they, with like a small bag or a Velcro strap or whatever, some of them went into a water bottle, and they would just fit into a water bottle cage, and then the wires would come out of there, and you would do that. And these were all rechargeable lights, so they were made so that you could use them, and then at the end of the day, when you get back and done with your light, with your night ride or your darkness ride, you could just simply plug it in and then recharge it and use it again the next day. They had a life to them. They would only last for so long. There were only so many recharge cycles on them, as there are with any rechargeable light system that's out there. But the technology has gone from really from the prehistoric and Stone Age to today. And today, as we are all carrying around small computers in our pockets and putting a ridiculous amount of information on a little tiny stick that's about the size of your small finger, the technology is just so incredibly far advanced, and it's like that with lighting systems too. I have been working with and representing a bicycle lighting company for probably the last 10 years, maybe 12 years, and they told me that the technology, now that we've moved into LED lights, is advancing at such a rate that by the time they've researched what they're going to produce and put onto the market, and then they put it into production, they do all the development that they need to do. They get this product onto the shelves, which runs around, 6 months or so, right around there, by the time they start to the time they finish, that the technology is three steps behind what's happening right now. So it's like computers. Computers are just moving so fast. They move so far forward. You know, you buy a cell phone now, and your cell phone, after 2 years, is an antique. And it's like, come on. I mean, it was a state-of-the-art piece of equipment when you bought it. And then 2 years later, it's, you can't have that one. You have to have this one or this one or this one. And you don't really have to do that. You can still use the one you have. But the technology advancement is just so rapid right now that it's the same thing happening with lights. So I can now purchase a light for not a lot of money. And it'll have the lights, by the way, right now are going to lumens now. We're not dealing with watts anymore. Watts burn energy. So we want to use LED lights. And the LED lights require very, very little power to run. So they last for a really long time. Not only that, because they last so long, they will require a much smaller battery. When you require a smaller battery, now you've got an incredibly lightweight product, well under a pound in weight, that you can attach to either your handlebars or you can attach to your helmet, and you can see like a car. It's amazing. As a matter of fact, I have had I have a number of choices of lights that I can use because I actually work for a few companies that have lights. And I have had a 350 lumen light, which is a very bright light. And I have had that on the top of my helmet. And then I've had another 600 or 700 lumen light on my handlebars. And I look like a car going down the road. It's amazing. And if someone comes at me with a vehicle, if there's a driver of a car that's coming towards me, and they kick up their high beams to see what this thing is that's coming down the road, because I look pretty bright and pretty unusual, all I have to do is look into the driver's side window and they kick their high beams down immediately. And it's because I'm flashing them in the eyes with my beam, which makes them realize that their beam is too high, just kind of like you would if you were driving your car down the road and someone had their high beams on. You want to kick them down so that you can see where you're going, because it's very blinding. It's incredible how powerful these lights are and how light they are. And then the beauty of them, the real beauty of them, is run times and also how light they are. They are just, you're hardly carrying any weight with you anymore. A 350 lumen light, when I put it on top of my helmet, I can barely tell I have something on top of my helmet. So it's really... it's not restrictive in any way. It doesn't make my helmet dip down when I hit a bump or anything like that. The old lights used to be a lot heavier, a lot clunkier. The old lights used to have a wire that came out of the back of them and went down to a battery pack, which you carried with you so that you could power the light on top of your helmet. Now they're completely contained. The battery is inside of the light, and that is up on top of your helmet. And you're hardly even able to notice it because they're so light. So the technology is incredible. The runtime, if you're running a small light like that, you're running it at the full 350 lumens, you're going to get at least an hour and a half out of that light before you have to recharge it. If you don't want to use all of those lumens and you want to kick it down and bring it down to, let's say you want to bring it down to 200 lumens, you're going to get 2.5 hours of runtime out of that light. So if you're going to be out that long in the dark, I don't think so. That's an awfully long commute. And you can get lights that will last even longer if you wish. You can even get lights that are as powerful as 3,600 lumens, which is the capacity of light that you would have in a very, very high-level sports car. It's just incredible how much light you're going to get out of that. Anyway, so the lights have improved. There's also another thing that is happening, and that is that there are these small add-on lights that you can put on your bicycle or on your body or on your helmet that flash. And those little flashing lights, they attract attention, and they let cars know and trucks know when they're coming down the road that there's someone in the road, and they can see you very, very easily, even if you're completely dressed in black, which we'll talk about that in a bit. But even if you're in very, very dark clothing, you are very well seen. So if you take a look at that, that's another major improvement. So the idea is, just like reflectors that would be on a bicycle, hopefully they'll be on a bicycle. If you're riding at night, it's a great idea to have reflectors on your bike. Just like the reflectors, they would be white in the front and they would be red in the rear. And then, of course, if you want, you can also put reflectors in your wheels. And so if anyone comes at you from the side, they'll be able to see you because the reflectors will stand out as you're pedaling by. So very, very important to be seen, very important to be noticed when you're out there. There are those of us who are of the of the mindset that, you know, we just ride our bikes during the day, so we don't have particular reflectorization on our bikes. We don't want to put it on our bikes because we're a little bit of a bike snob, and, you know, we don't want to have the extra weight or the extra, you know, we just don't want to have that look on there. We want the bike real clean. That's fine, but don't ride your bike at night unless you have something on your bike to be able to make it so that you are seen. Please, please don't do that. I have a funny story that goes along with this. There was many, many years ago, I was riding my bike up here through Stores, and I had pulled up to a traffic light right as I was getting ready to turn onto Route 195 from Route 275. And I'm in the lane, and I'm signaling that I'm going to turn with my hand, point in the direction that I'm going to turn. And a gentleman pulls up alongside of me, and he said, "Do you realize that you do not have one reflector on that bicycle?" Well, it was 2 hours before dark, and I looked down at my bike, and then I looked over at him, and I said, "Yes, I do realize that," and kind of like looked up at the sky, which was very bright, and I said, do you realize that you don't have the lights on in your car and it wouldn't make any difference anyway? That unfortunately irritated him, and he drove off in a huff. But the fact is that the reflectors don't work unless the car has the lights on and unless it's dark enough for them to pick it up. So just a thing. That's why I like the flashing lights best. They also make these nice bright red lights in the back, which flash in a variety of different ways. You can get lights with so many different patterns that will flash back at whoever has come out behind you. People can see you for up to a mile away with one of those flashing lights on if you have one of the higher powered ones. And when I'm talking about a higher powered one, I'm talking about 100 lumens. I'm not talking about a lot of light here. And they really attract a lot of attention. They really capture the driver who's coming up from the back. And you can literally hear them slowing down a quarter mile back when they see those lights flashing. Now, here's the question. Should I be using these during the day? Because they do flash and they cause people to pay attention that there is a bicycle in the road. Just like daytime running lights, sure, not a bad idea. You know, if you put them on during the day, I find them mildly obnoxious during the day, and but you can tone them down. You can choose a light that's not as bright flashing during the daytime, so you can do that. So there is that possibility. As a matter of fact, when you're riding in a group, I know we ride with people that have flashing lights on. They have their rear lights on. They're flashing all day long when we're riding on our bikes. There are different levels of which you can set that light so that you can create either a very, very bright flashing beam or just a quieter one, which will make it less distracting to the people you're riding with. So choose your lights carefully. Choose your level of which you set your light carefully. And sure, use them during the day. That's great. We can be seen that way. As long as we're seen, that's a good thing. So now we go to other alternatives that are coming in with lights. A few years ago, one of the companies that I work for developed a special light, which was a rear light, which attaches onto the back of my seat post on my bicycle. Or you could attach it onto a belt if you're wearing a belt, because there's a clip mount on it. And a lot of these lights have that. And it had a number of different beam patterns that it shot out, the flashing and then the steady beam and then the lower beam and then the rapid flashing beam, you know, all these different beams that shot out. But then it had a second button on it. Now, the second button controlled a different light, and the light was laser beams. There are two laser beams on the light. There are a number of these lights now on the market. This company was the first one to come out with them. And unfortunately, it took from the time we brought the product to market to the time when we were actually able to sell it, took an additional 8 months, because whenever you have a laser beam on any product, you have to pass the Food and Drug Administration's requirements for laser beams, which I had no idea about, but we certainly found out about that because we had a shelf full of them we couldn't ship. So anyway, what do the laser beams do? Well, there's two beams. They shoot out from the bottom of the light, and they project a beam of light, a line of light, alongside the bicycle on both sides. So what this does for you is it creates a 3-foot lane of which you ride in, and it's with you all the time because it's shooting that light down onto the pavement. So anyway, it's pretty neat, because when you're out in the dark and you're pedaling and it's very, very dark out, you see these glowing beams of light alongside of you. You can set them to flash, you can set them to really fast flash, or you can set them to a solid beam, and they are extremely noticeable. What do? They let the cars know to give you space when they go by you. It's really pretty cool. So you're traveling in a path of light when you're riding your bike down the road. Pretty cool stuff. So that's a neat little innovation that's come along. There are also lots of these little LED lights. The LED lights, by the way, these are really inexpensive. The little ones that attach onto the back or the front of the bike, they don't require a lot of power. The batteries that are in them, on some of them, they are replaceable batteries. On others, they are rechargeable batteries. It depends on what unit you get and the cost there of the unit. But if they're rechargeable, they're rechargeable by plugging it into a USB port on your computer or anywhere else, and you can simply recharge the light. So it's a really, really cool function. I have been poking around online, and it is unbelievable some of the cool stuff that's out there, though. There are lights that you can put into your wheels that are programmable by your cell phone, and you can have a pattern that, once you get up to speed, develops to the point where you can actually have a picture of your friend that is projected onto your wheels as your wheels build up speed and combine all the lights together. And you can have other patterns too. You can have rainbow colors. You can have, you know, different geometric patterns that appear. And the lights, they completely light up the wheel, so you can be seen from the side very, very easily. They're pretty cool looking. So there's some great companies out there. Again, you have to do a little bit of searching on that. I am not affiliated with any of those, so I can't really give you any real good information. But if you go online, you'll be able to see them. I was really impressed with how they look when you see them at night. And it's just another way that we've just become so much more visible. And there is no real reason why you should not be visible when you're riding your bicycle at night. So let's pay attention to that, because the technology's out there. The prices have come way, way down. So the affordable technology is now out there. You don't have to break the bank to put lights on your bike. And in the state of Connecticut and other states, you are required to have at least reflectors on your bikes, if not lights on your bikes at night. So you need to check your laws and see exactly what it is that works for your state. But I know in Connecticut, you need to have a front and a rear light to be out at night. It is a requirement, and you could get a ticket for not doing that. So be seen, please. That way we'll know that you're still able to ride your bicycle. It's a beautiful thing. Moving on from the lighting situation, now we move into clothing. So it's getting colder out. We've noticed that. We got up this morning here, and it was 33 or 34 degrees this morning. In some places, it was below 30 degrees. There was a frost. So you're riding your bike to work. You're 5 miles away from work, 10 miles away from work, whatever your commute is. And you get up in the wee hours of the morning, and now you've got lights all over your bike, which is great, because now you can see and be seen. More importantly, be seen. And you are going, but it's too cold. It's really cold out now. So how do you deal with this? Well, the temperatures obviously change this time of year very rapidly, so it does warm up fairly quickly. I'm a big, big fan of layers, and I'm a really big fan of having extra pieces of equipment on me that I can easily remove while I'm riding my bike. So there's, you know, a jacket is a little bit harder to remove, but you can remove it if you need to. You may have to pull over. You probably will have to pull over. Some people are talented enough to be able to actually put their jackets on and take their jackets off while they are riding their bike. I don't recommend that, only because it does require a skill level, which not all people have. So don't be a hero. You know, pull over, change your jacket, do whatever you have to do. And again, if you're comfortable with changing your clothes while you're riding your bike or stripping down, let's say you started out with the thin light jacket on and then it got too warm and now you want to take it off and then stuff it in your back pocket, then great, do that. If you're on a group ride and you're doing that, please do not do it in the middle of the group. Drift off the back. Be by yourself when you do it so you don't cause any problems. But it's definitely something that's easy enough to do if you practice it and you have the skills to do it. So I am a big believer of, just like you carry a spare tube on your bicycle, I am a believer of the ultra-thin lightweight jacket. And there are a number of companies that make them. There are a lot of them that make them in very, very bright colors, either a very bright orange or a bright yellow, fluorescent yellow kind of color. They literally crumple up into the palm of your hand. So they're very, very small, and they're really, really easy to carry with you. Just like it's really easy to carry a spare tube with you on your bicycle, it's easy to carry one of these small jackets. And they will fit in your rear pocket on your bicycle. on your bicycle jersey, if you're wearing a bicycle jersey. If you are not, they will fit very easily into a small bag that you might carry on the bike. But the technology, again, is great on this product. You will find some that are breathable. You will find some that are not. Some of them are just a thin, light shell made out of possibly a ripstop nylon or something like that. And they're not going to breathe really well, but they're going to keep chill off of you. So that's important. I also find that to be a really important piece of equipment when you are out on a ride and you might have some damp weather heading in your direction and you're not really sure if you're going to have to deal with that or not. So you just stuff this little jacket in your back pocket, and then if it starts to drizzle, then you can take it out and you can put it on, and it'll keep you a little bit of a protective layer over the top of you. As far as layers go underneath, big proponent of base layers. Base layers are synthetic layers that will breathe and wick moisture off of your body and draw the moisture away from your body and away from your skin and out to the outside layer where it can actually dry off. So good base layers are well worth their weight in gold. We live in a house of many base layers because Fran and I both believe in these. We use them not only for our bicycles, but we use them when we go hiking. We use them when we're out doing a run or a walk. Base layers are just an incredible piece of fabric which will keep you more comfortable as you will sweat when you're working out or when you're riding your bike, and you want to keep that moisture away from the body so you don't get chilled. So a good base layer is great too. Another thing that both Fran and I like a lot, we love arm warmers. Arm warmers are an ability, they give you the ability to take your short sleeve jersey if you are riding with a bicycle jersey. They allow you to put long sleeves on, and they simply will go around all the way up your arm. They usually have some sort of a gripper at the top, which keeps them from falling down. It's important to get the right size, so it's important to, you know, find a place where you can try them on and make sure that they fit you nice and snug. And they do fit you snug. They fit you like a second skin, like a sleeve on your arm. And you can get them in varying materials. The ones that I love the most, I've got a pair of merino wool ones, which they're knit, and the knit tends to stay. I have really thin arms. I'm skinny, and I find that some of the products just don't stay up on my arms, even with the rubber grippers on them, because my arms are not large. So I'm a big believer in the knit ones, because the knit ones kind of shrink around your body, and they move with you a little bit better, and they stay put better for me. So I like those a lot. And so the arm warmers give you instant sleeves, and now all of a sudden you're a lot warmer. You use an arm warmer with a short sleeve base layer underneath your short sleeve jersey, and you're all set to go. And that'll get you into the, 50s probably, the low 60s or high 50s in temperature, and you'll be fairly comfortable. Now we go down below the waist. So you get down below the waist, now you've got a pair of bicycle shorts, and people go, oh boy, I'm going to ride, but I don't want to ride. I don't want to go out and have to spend all this money on a pair of tights. Tights are a thing that you can pull over your shorts, and they're, completely long-legged all the way down to the ankle, and you can get them in varying levels of warmth and protection. But if you don't want to spend a lot of money, the least expensive way to do this, and very, very effective, and again, it's one of those essentials, kind of like a spare tube. It's one of those essentials. I love knee warmers. Knee warmers create the effect of taking your shorts and making them into a pair of knickers. And if you take a look at all the old-timer bicycle photos from back in the day, what were people riding with? They were riding with knickers. Because knickers are a thing. They work really well for pedaling a bicycle because they give you protection. They keep your quads, your upper legs, very warm, which are where your major muscle mass is on your legs. Keep them super warm and comfortable, and keep you from getting cramps, that sort of thing. And they're easy to pedal with. So how do you take a pair of these things called knee warmers? They look really silly. They're just a little short piece. They're probably only about a foot and a half long. And they have grippers on them, both on the top and the bottom, and that are on the inside. And you pull them up over your knees, and you tuck them into the bottom of your short. And then, of course, they hang down below your knee. So now they're protecting your knee. So they're keeping your knee a lot warmer. And now you effectively have a pair of knickers that you're riding with on your bike. These are really inexpensive, as are the arm warmers. They're really inexpensive. They don't cost a lot of money. They're very, very easy for you to carry with you. But the most important thing about them is when it warms up and you start getting to the point where you're a little overdressed and you're feeling uncomfortable, you can take them off and you can stuff them in your rear pockets on your bicycle or in your bicycle bag. So they're really easy to pack because they don't take up a whole lot of space. So these are essentials. These are things that every cyclist should have because they really do make a difference. If you're the type of cyclist that does not like to dress up in shiny, tight Lycra, they're still nice to have. You can wear them underneath what you're wearing and they will keep you a little bit warmer. And no one will know that you're wearing something tight and Lycra underneath your regular clothes. So they're really, really effective. They work really well. If you get into the colder weather, when we start getting to really cold weather, you should probably look into investing in a pair of tights. Tights are great. They will often have a layer in the inside of them which has some insulation, which is helpful. There are some that actually even have a windbreaking layer on the front of them, and they will allow you, they will actually keep you a whole lot warmer because it's like wearing a pair of nylon pants. But they, because it's only in the front, they breathe really well and they allow some of the heat to go out of the back. I always find, no matter what tights I have on that have the wind front, my legs are a little damp when I get done from the on the fronts because they do work that well. They really hold the heat in nicely and keep you very, very warm. So that's another option that you have. I prefer a bib tight versus a regular tight just because I don't like them falling down on me. And that helps them. It kind of works like a suspender. I also have some suspenders that I use on the tights that don't have that option. But anyway, tights are super handy. Okay, we've worked our way down. Actually, we're going to stay up top here just for one more shot here. We're going to talk about our hands. Your hands get cold too, obviously, and there are different levels of gloves that you can use. There are inexpensive options. There are very expensive options. You can go whatever direction you want to go. I get really cold really easily, so I tend to overdress when it comes to my hands because I really don't like cold fingers because I can't operate my brakes, I can't operate my shifters, and that is annoying to me. I have also found a really, really cool product out on the market, and it is it's this nifty little thing that goes over your handlebars, and it makes it so you kind of put your hands into them, and they allow you to completely encase your hand inside of a protective area, which is made out of, I think it's like a neoprene is what they're made out of. And they keep your hands like toasty warm in the inside. You don't have to use a very heavy level of glove when you use them. They make them for mountain bike handlebars, or upright handlebars like you would use on a hybrid. They also make them for drop bars too. I'm going to mention the company's name because it is a very good product. They're called Bar Mitts. And it's kind of a funny name, but what a clever product. Works really well. I think they're the best I've ever used on my hands. Better than any super warm glove I've ever used. Way better. Because they also give you that flexibility so that you're not dealing with a heavy glove, which tends to be a little cumbersome sometimes. So Bar Mitts are great. Moving down now, we're going to go down, down, down. We're going down to the feet. What we used to call back in the day when I was racing my bicycle a lot and training in just terrible weather and out in weather that I would never ride in now, we used to call it the agony of defeat, which was, it was from an old sports network that they used to have on TV. They'd talk about the agony of defeat, which is obviously different, but it was a joke. Anyway, The agony of defeat. Okay, how many times have you gone out and ridden your bicycle? It's really, really cold out, and you get back, and your feet are frozen. I mean, just frozen. Not good at all. They hurt. They're in pain, or you've gone past the hurt, and now they're just so numb that you can't even deal with it. And you are, you know, fighting to keep your to keep yourself going because all you can focus on is the fact I can't feel my feet anymore. That's not a good place to be. You should never, never have to go that far. So they make some really interesting products for the feet, too. They make special shoes that are not inexpensive. They are very expensive, and they will keep your feet warm. They will, they're actually called a winter cycling boot, and they are a much heavier shoe than you would normally use in the winter. Or on your bicycle, and they are often insulated, and they are usually a higher top on them. They're not as easy to pedal with, but boy, they do keep your feet warm. So that's one option. The other option is you can get things called shoe covers, or what we like to call booties in the bicycle industry. And the booties can come in varying degrees also. They can come in the super lightweight and waterproof version, or water resistant, we'll call it, so you could ride on a rainy day and not get your feet as wet, right on down to the super industrial strength. Oh my God, I live in Connecticut by my UConn campus, and it's really cold outside, and I need something to keep my feet warm, and they'll have insulating properties. They can be made out of a Gore-Tex material that's breathable. There's a lot of really good things about them that will help you keep your feet warm. None of it really seems to work for me. I have a limit on my feet, and that's why I won't ride under 40 degrees outside, because my feet just can't stay warm. There are other options. There are these chemical warmers that you can put inside of your gloves and inside of your shoes, and they will emit some heat to help keep your toes warm. They work okay for some people. They work not so okay for me, but everyone has their thing. There are also, and you can get those at any, a lot of bike shops have them now. A lot of outdoor stores carry them. Running stores carry them. You can find them around. They're fairly readily available. And then, there are even battery powered electric insoles that you can get for your shoes. And I've been told that they work unbelievably well, and that I would ride my bike in the colder weather if I had them. But I have not experimented with them yet. They're not inexpensive, and so I have stayed away from those. But that is another option that you have. So you can actually use those too, and they'll keep your feet warm. And the other thing is they keep your feet dry too when you put these, or not those, but when you put the shoe covers on, they keep your feet dry too, which is important because once your feet get wet, then you're in a lot of trouble. I'm also a big proponent of wool socks. I love wool socks. I wear wool socks all year round if I can. Even in the summer, I'll wear a thin, light wool sock. They breathe better. They feel good on me. I'm not allergic to wool, and I really like them a lot. But that is something that is a personal thing. So you can do whatever you want as far as that goes. Let's talk about wind chill a little bit. Wind chill is what happens when you add speed to temperature, okay? Or you add wind speed to temperature. So wind chill can be a problem, and it's to the point where you will find on a very windy, cold day, you're going to, you can get chilled a lot more so than you would if you were just walking, let's say. Because on a bicycle, you're going to be traveling at 10, 15, maybe even 20 miles per hour on the bicycle. Let's call it simply 10 miles an hour on the bike. So you're commuting, you're not going fast, you're riding at 10 miles an hour, and there's a 10 mile an hour headwind you're going into. Well, you're going 20 miles an hour now. That's what you're dealing with. Let's say that it's 30 degrees outside. Okay, so that's pretty cold, like this morning. That's what it was this morning. So you're going 10 miles an hour, okay? There's a 10 mile an hour wind coming out of the northwest, okay, which is not a huge wind. It's just 10 miles an hour. It's not that much. So you've got 20 miles an hour you're dealing with there, and you add that to that 30 degrees out. It's 17.4 degrees out, folks. It's cold. So you have to look at this. Now let's increase our temperature a little bit. We're going to do the same speed. We're going to still have the same wind speed out there. Okay. So you're not going any faster. At 40 degrees, it's 30.5 degrees Fahrenheit out. At 50 degrees, same factors, okay, not going very fast, just got that good old wind speed coming out of the northwest. At 50 degrees, it's 43.6 degrees outside. So if you're riding your bicycle, let's say now you're going to take that 50-degree weather, which is pretty reasonable to ride in, right? Not so bad, right? And you're going 15 miles an hour. And you're dealing with, let's say you're going 15 miles an hour, but now you're going down a hill. So your speed comes up to, let's say it comes up to 35 miles an hour. So you're going 35 miles an hour. And this is without the wind. And you're at 41.4 degrees. So wind chill. No one thinks about wind chill. I talk about this all the time. I show up on a ride, people look at me and they go, kind of overdressed today, aren't you, Ron? And I go, no, I'm not, because I know we're going to go out, we're going to ride in the hills, and yes, I'm going to be warm when I'm climbing the hills, but when I'm going down the back side of that hill, my 55 degree, 60 degree day is no longer 55 and 60 degrees, and it's really important for me to protect my knees and to protect my body in general. So, yeah, I may look a little overdressed, but I would rather sweat than be cold. So everyone's different. Everyone has a different level of comfort that they can tolerate. My feeling is that the knees that you have are the knees that you got when you came onto this earth, and they should be protected, and it's really, really important to protect them. So I do. I make sure that I have good protection over my knees. I make sure that I have good protection on my chest. I want to keep myself warm. If you can keep, this is a really interesting study that was done recently, and it was on keeping not as much focus on keeping your chest warm, but keeping your back warm and your lower back warm. Why is that, Fran? You would know that. What are we looking at in the lower back region of the body that would need to be kept warm, that would keep you warmer? You have any ideas?
Well, let's see. Well, your organs are in the front, so they're warm anyway.
Right, but there's one set of organs in the back.
Oh, your kidneys.
Yes.
Yes.
And what goes through your kidneys all the time?
Blood and pee.
And blood especially,
yes.
Right? So the blood is going through. So there are manufacturers of products now, of clothing, bicycle-related and motorcycle-related too, by the way, because this is the same company is doing it. And they make something to warm your kidneys and keep your kidneys warm. By keeping your kidneys warm, it keeps the blood warm, so
right.
It's always pumping warm blood throughout your entire body.
Yeah.
Clever idea.
Yes,
very, very clever idea. So I just thought that was kind of a neat thing. When I found that, I was really surprised to see it, because I've always been, you know, told that, you know, you want to keep the air off your chest. You want to keep that cold air off your chest. And it's, as it is true, it's, you know, most of the cycling related jackets and protection equipment that is made to protect you from the front, not from the back. And there's a new theory out there about this. So I'm kind of excited to give that a try, because they make, this particular company not only makes a jacket, which works well, but they also have an actual, like what you call a kidney belt, that has a warming unit in it. And it will keep your kidneys warm, and therefore supposedly keeps your body a lot warmer. So it will be fun to try it. But I have not had any experience with it at this time. So these are things that you need to pay attention to. We're kind of covering, this is our pay attention to dressing for this time of year. Be bright, be visible on the road. there is so much clothing out there that is made in, please don't hit me yellow is what I like to call it, but that fluorescent yellow color that you'll see a lot of the highway workers now wearing. You'll see people, first responders, wearing it now too, so that they don't get hit. It really, if you can't see that, then you really aren't paying attention when you're driving your car. But you want to make yourself as visible as possible. There's also some great reflectorized clothing that's out there too. And the reflectorized clothing just catches light at a much higher level than it ever used to. Once again, our technology has advanced dramatically. So you want to take a look at that. Take a look at your options. There's a lot of options out there. Go visit your local bike store. Talk to them. They'll show you every jacket you could possibly imagine. And they're comfortable and they're warm and they make a lot of sense and you'll have them for years. So certainly a good investment as far as that goes. And you can use it for other things. It's not that you just have to use it when you're riding your bicycle. So visibility is key. Keeping warm is key. These are all very, very important things that you want to pay attention to when you're out riding this time of year. Mostly this time of year, I really like to push the idea of the visibility thing because as the weather gets cooler and the days get shorter, the automobiles, the motorized vehicles are not as aware of the fact that you're out there. They're expecting to see you out there during the warm days. They're not expecting to see you as much in the cooler days because there's a lot of people that are not very hardcore, so the masses stop riding their bicycles at the at this time of year. But if you're still out there, please be seen, be safe, and be careful. I have a final wrap-up here. Before we leave, I'd like to mention once again, and I've been mentioning this every week, that Bike Walk Connecticut is having its annual dinner and silent auction on November 11th, 2016. You can find out more information at www.bikewalkct.org. And you can join Bike Walk Connecticut at Central Connecticut State University on Friday, November 11th for their annual dinner. And they also have a silent auction. So you can bid on like really cool stuff, some which is bicycle related, some which is not. Sometimes there's like a bottle of wine or something like that you can bid on. But it's a fundraiser for their organization. It's a good organization. They're very helpful to us in this state and keeping us all informed and also passing through legislature, which is very important. Anyway, you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you are listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is 91.7 WHUS Connecticut, Storrs, Connecticut. Thank you very much for listening.